Live with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Yeah, it's June. It's feeling a little bit more like summer than earlier this week. It was just beautiful. It's still beautiful, but the temperature going up, and so is the humidity. So that's the way it is. It's June. Enjoy. Welcome in, everybody. Bill, Dan, and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer in for his Thursday with us. Hope everybody doing well. Drew at the controls. How are you guys?
Doing well.
Big Justin Thursday on the show, right? I mean, not only Justin Ferguson.
That is right. It's double Justin. Justin Kirby's going to join us at 5:30 for our Tiger Takes of the Week.
That's right.
Going
to talk to Auburn outfielder Justin Kirby about the week they got to spend in Hoover, and actually the week they got to spend off after leaving the SEC tournament. Team found out they were going to be regional hosts over the weekend.
Yeah, maybe get some of the highlights of the lake trip.
Yeah. Want to hear about how the visit to the lake. You know, hopefully no one was just there for the zip line. You know, it was a team building
activity.
Yeah, they were able to establish even more chemistry. But you know, we were saying, Justin, that the You want to be careful with something like momentum in baseball, because even a brief reset can sort of change things. Auburn played so well down the stretch, but this team might have needed a break. I mean, we had Jason Caldwell in here. He went to Hoover and said the team seemed a little bit fatigued towards the end of the Alabama game. This is a team that probably benefited from a week plus off, and now they'll get to play at home, sleep in their own beds, and play in front of a really partisan Auburn crowd tomorrow night. Tomorrow night against Penn, yes, sellout should be. Would you be surprised, Bill, if they trotted out the Eagle for one of these games?
No, I wouldn't be surprised. Baseball? I just
probably don't want to announce anything too far in advance.
Well, yeah, and I wonder
if the Raptor squad is in town.
If the NCAA
can you do that if you're a host?
I'm wondering if you can do that if you only did it for.
Or do you need to treat it more
would
like
you do
a
it every site? Like yeah. you did, would you need to do it for every game or John, make it available for every? That's what I was wondering, that the NCAA in its pettiness might say, well, that's you're not supposed to do things to really amplify the home field advantage.
Interesting. Well, John Cohen's been pretty happy with the Eagle flights outside of the football stadium so far. So we'll see if that's something Auburn attempts, or if, like you said, maybe the fact that it's NCAA postseason play makes it a little bit tougher. But Auburn will play Penn tomorrow in the second game of the Auburn Regional. Samford and Southern Miss getting things started.
I got a
question.
Really good game.
Are tickets still available for the Samford Southern Miss game? Or is
they had to buy all of them.
Has everything sold out?
They're gone. They are gone. There may be some folks that aren't going
to
use
them. Am I talking to somebody who has tickets to Samford Southern Miss tomorrow?
I believe I had heard that they were going to do like on Saturday and Sunday they might have some like single game things available that day. But no, yeah, if you wanted to get tickets to the weekend, you needed to get the whole package.
Well, should be a really lively crowd tomorrow night for Auburn and Penn, and then if Auburn can get the win, they're playing in an afternoon spot on Saturday, right? It's the evening
it's
spot.
8 o'clock.
That's the 8 o'clock
eight
game. You're
o'clock.
Right. If Auburn wins, they're playing the 8 o'clock.
Playing
game
out of
Saturday.
The heat, or out of the worst of the heat for sure. For the good luck if you don't have tickets.
And that could be for television, although it was pointed out to me that ESPN's also going to have some softball obligations this weekend as well.
Women's College World Series.
Yeah, absolutely. Women's College World Series starts today. Tennessee beat Alabama in a game earlier today, and so. I guess they're still in the double elimination round, so nobody's out yet. But Alabama drops.
I believe Tennessee Alabama was the first game.
Yeah, Alabama drops the first game of the tournament.
Yeah, what was the final? I mean, Alabama actually made it a little more. It looked like they were going to get run ruled in the fourth inning.
10-5. Yeah.
It was 10-2 like in the fourth.
I think they're carrying as much of that as they can on ESPN, and so a lot of the baseball that will be on national television this weekend will be on ESPN2, ESPNU. The SEC Network and the ACC network, Auburn put out a release pointing out, I think this is Auburn baseball's first game on ESPN Plus, not SEC Plus, but ESPN Plus in a while. You do need an ESPN Plus subscription to watch the games this weekend, Bill, because people have been saying the SEC Network Plus subscription is a different service than ESPN Plus.
That's the one that I have terrible problems. I have it, but I have terrible problems with my TV wanting me to over and over and over again, you know, verify my credentials.
That's the one. That's SEC Network Plus, right? Because he wants to get into he wants to verify a cable service for that one. ESPN Plus is just the subscription service that you get for sort of generic catch-all stuff.
Both,
you can get have problems with both, but you need subscriptions to both of them.
Oh yes,
you can't if you don't have an ESPN Plus subscription, you're not going to be able to watch the games on the app this weekend. So I would encourage those are still in the single digits per month, right? Like that's a $5.99 or $6.99 deal on ESPN. So just a reminder in case anybody was. I know Auburn was concerned enough to put out something about that. So yeah, heads up about the about the ways you can watch this weekend if you're not going to the park.
We're just getting underway. Hour number one of the Thursday drive, as usual, brought to you by our friends at Kia of Auburn on South College and KiaofAuburn.com. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. And they're also the sponsor of our hotline, one of the ways you can get through to us, by calling 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, which is available however you listen to podcasts. You can go to ESPNAU.com or RadioAlabama.net, use the podcast center, or just go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. It's all there, and it's all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
We'd love to hear from you. Justin here with us, I mean, a lot going on. I mean, Obviously we opened up talking about the baseball regional, but I mean, basketball. Yesterday was the deadline for players to pull themselves out of the NBA draft. Auburn got a couple of expected last-minute notifications after the big news came from Jani Broom. I guess it was...
Monday.
Yeah, I was trying to, because of the long weekend, I couldn't remember if it was Sunday or Monday.
Monday evening. Yeah, no, Jalen Williams and Dylan Carwell both going back. Also interesting, some of the guys that Auburn really pushed after hard in the portal made some interesting decisions there. Julian Phillips staying in the NBA draft, which I think a lot of people started to kind of lean that way down the stretch. Tyron Lawrence announced that he's coming back to Vanderbilt, so pretty big win there for Stackhouse and the gang, there started to be
sort of a belief that that Lawrence could be there were Vanderbilt folks all along who thought he was coming back to school but wanted to improve his NIL standing, and maybe that involved flirting with the NBA and other programs, and if you have the leverage to do so, like, I can't fault a guy for doing that. And it sounds like it paid off with Tyron Lawrence getting what, if he indeed wanted to stay in school and just improve his financial position at Vanderbilt, it sounds like that is indeed what ended up happening. Kobe Brown, a pretty big one too. We talked about that one yesterday on the show.
Oscar Tshiebwe staying in the draft as well. That was kind of surprising, I thought, for Kentucky. By the way, I talked to Dan about this last night when we recorded our podcast, but I was wondering, Bill, do you know how many scholarship players Kentucky basketball has right now?
Not many. I don't know the exact number, but not nearly enough. And who are all the guys that they have anyway?
Yeah, Calipari woke up this morning with seven. They have seven.
Wow, I was gonna guess eight.
Yeah,
Auburn has 10.
Yeah, yeah, and they'll have 10. You're probably looking at a scenario where Lior Berman.
Gets scholarship. That'll be 11.
Yeah, that's probably where they're going to be, and then you can use your other two to reward some walk-ons. But yeah, this is, you don't need a ton. It's like when I was talking to Auburn fans, during the whole portal process. It's like, yeah, you need 10. You'd feel good with 10 the way Auburn plays. 11 would be great as well. But anything more than that, it's guys who aren't going to play for you.
Right.
You don't play that deep. 10 is a pretty deep rotation by college basketball. 7, though, I mean, you get to that point where if you're Kentucky, if you're not
– A lot of teams only use 7, but you better not get anybody hurt anything.
I wonder if Kentucky's done, though, right? I mean,
I'm sure Kentucky's
going to go swimming. Yeah, they're going to go in the
portal.
But
what are the options now?
What are the options? I mean, I wonder who's –
I wonder if Hunter Dickinson would have made a different decision if he knew Shibue was leaving.
The fella from Creighton, not Trey Alexander, who I believe is coming back to school. Trey Alexander is another one that we've talked about before.
Did you see the other one that stayed in the draft?
Is Kaluma still?
No, it was Auburn Ty stay in the draft. Justin Powell
stayed. Justin Powell stayed in the draft. Yeah.
Wow.
We were talking. I mean, Justin Powell had a solid season.
Had a good year. Had a good year at Washington State.
And rebounding and 3-point shooting are two things where if you can do it at a high enough level, it feels like you can get a paycheck to play basketball. Justin Powell had an excellent year from beyond the arc. Kind of gets back to the, like, I don't know what the professional basketball career of Oscar Tshiebwe looks like, but I do feel
bench
like
big man.
But there have been guys who rebounded their tail off and did enough dirty work that they found
Dennis
their way.
Rodman?
I mean, Dennis Rodman, Ben Wallace, Paul Millsap.
Yeah, more recently, I think, because the thing with Tshiebwe is that Shibwe's not a 7-footer, but he rebounds like he's a 7-footer. I think of Pete with the Nuggets in the finals.
Kenneth Faried
yeah, makes a ton of sense as well.
I met him on UCLA's campus one time during the lockout. He was working out on the basketball court.
Tristan Thompson was a big one like that as well. And then sometimes, I mean, it just when you talk about getting guys really highly rated in the draft, like high up, you usually don't just get he's a rebounder, because like Thomas Robinson had that problem coming out of Kansas, and then. The Kings guy, Marvin Bagley. He elite rebounder. You don't take an elite rebounder at number 2 overall in a draft class that I believe he was in the Luka Trey Young class, I think.
Yeah, and Millsap Millsap led Division I in rebounding 3 years in a row as a college player at La Tech, and was totally overlooked as a professional prospect. Like, was a guy that people Paul Millsap went 47th overall. After leading Division I, that could be a Tshiebwe comparison there, Bill. Paul Millsap led D1 in rebounding 3 years in a row, went 47th overall in the draft as a player, and then had a
stuck in the league for a long time.
06 to he was on a roster earlier this year.
Millsap, Louisiana Tech, right?
Yes,
Louisiana Tech. Kenny Lawson Jr. from Louisiana Tech, somewhat recently. I think he is sticking around in the league now. Another guy who great rebounder, great inside scorer.
Karl Malone. Louisiana Tech as well. I mean, a couple power forwards. Do I have that right?
That sounds right.
I think that's
because Rodman played at like Southeastern Oklahoma State or something like that. But Tshiebwe is an interesting case. Nathan King at 247 wrote this earlier this week, mm-hmm. and I think it's a pretty good point. You can make the argument now that he's back and Tshiebwe gone, Colin Castleton gone. Jani Brew might be the best center in the SEC coming back this year, and that is a pretty impressive spot. It's Tolu Smith also back in Mississippi State. It should be a pretty big year for him. There's some guys that are, transferring into the league.
Is Triple J a center at Tennessee? The guy that just
beside Jordan James?
Yeah, he's not really a true power forward. He's coming back, which is
wing big. Yeah,
yeah, for a team
more like a Jalen Williams type than a true center.
I like because of that's a team that. Tennessee hasn't been as active as some of the other teams in the conference in the portal. I think bringing back Vescovi and Ziegler, like that, we always talk about guards and experience and stuff.
They recruited pretty well, too.
I think a backcourt of Vescovi and Ziegler can navigate quite a bit of especially in conference. Like, we'll see what happens in the tournament. But I'd go into battle with
they
two
are
guys
losing
like that.
Olivier. I always get his last name wrong.
Kamua. I think it's Kemwa,
Kemwa, who went nuts in the NCAA tournament for Tennessee. I think I saw that Michigan might be the favorite for him. But, yeah, Tennessee is going to be an interesting case as well. There's just not a whole lot left in the portal. The big man from Kansas is going to TCU. I know Alabama pushed hard again. Alabama got some good news here down the stretch as well. So, shaping up to be a really, really fun SEC season in the SEC. And, Dan, we talked about it yesterday, you and I, but – Ole Miss, not only getting Allen Flanagan officially, but Bringing back some key guys there. Chris Beard,
Chris Beard's going to bring some talent in.
I told Dan, this is not a bold prediction by any means, but the Ole Miss reminds me a lot of, like, they could end up doing what Missouri just did last season. New coach, bringing in some new talent, although Missouri had a lot of seniors on that team, but bringing in some new talent and then immediately making an impact. Because, I mean, that Ole Miss team, as currently constructed with a good coach, will make a run at the NCAA tournament.
Some basketball news coming out today, though. Auburn, yeah. Auburn announcing a very impressive season opener.
Yeah, a rare one, too, that Auburn is playing in a season. They're going to play Baylor in South Dakota, which you may be thinking, why? Sioux Falls, South Dakota, they play neutral site basketball games up there.
That's a vacation hotspot, right?
Well, I was talking about, like,
I actually think towards the end of the fall, like, there are,
it probably,
I mean,
is beautiful.
Yeah, I think there are.
And it's so easy to get to.
South Dakota's got
no, I think it's great.
Got neutral site basketball for some reason. They've got a few games lined up, and Auburn Baylor being one of them. First time Auburn is opening a season with a power conference opponent since 1988. You got to go all the way back
since,
to 88.
Since back in the days of the first NCAA that Auburn had.
Yeah. I was going to say that it's near Mount Rushmore, but it's 5.5 hours from Mount Rushmore.
South Dakota's huge.
Not quite, yeah.
But not like Montana huge, but South Dakota is huge once you start lining it up.
Is that too far to take the team on a bus trip, you think, in that situation?
5.5 hour bus trip?
5.5 hours.
11 hours in the day taken with a – yeah, I don't know.
You take the plane.
That's right. You fly over.
That is, by the way.
Hey, look, it's Lincoln.
It's the opening. Yeah. It's the opening week of college basketball season, and that is between the Vanderbilt and Arkansas trips in football.
So if you don't have anything better to do,
got an interesting
Nashville
triangle
to Sioux Falls
to Fayetteville. The triangle of destiny, as they call it.
Oh, that's yeah.
Yeah. Auburn playing Baylor. Bruce Pearl saying in a statement, like, this is a guaranteed quad one game. This is an awesome team you're going to open with. You know, Auburn played Baylor played Baylor a couple seasons ago in the Big 12 Challenge. As we all know, Baylor just continues to be, I mean, one of the best and most consistent programs in college basketball year in and year out, that Baylor team is.
Landed that guy, the player from the MAC, today, Ray J. Dennis, who was considered by some to be the top perimeter player in the portal at this point. He picked Baylor earlier today, and we were just talking about Olivier Kamwa from Tennessee. And he, I think Kamwa is what we're going with.
Yeah.
He is out of the draft, in the portal, not returning to Tennessee. Baylor folks think that they're in the lead position.
He looks like a Baylor player.
Yeah, and so
like that is a type of player that Scott Drew loves to have.
People who are, and we'll talk about this more as the game approaches, I think young people don't appreciate how barren the Baylor basketball program was.
In case you're listening and you don't know, Baylor basketball had one of the biggest scandals in American sports history, and was left
and didn't really have and didn't really have much tradition to speak of before that either. I mean, they were a perennial last place Big 12 team that then, after 40 or 50 years of futility, had a horrible scandal at the turn of the century.
Don't want to get into it on the air, but just Google Dave Bliss.
Yeah, Dave Bliss, and
who is still coaching? By the way, I don't know how.
Yeah, that's a wild. Wild one to explain away in the resume.
But yes, Baylor, I mean, Scott Drew, what he has done at Baylor is remarkable, because that they have little to no basketball history, and they have become one of the best, most consistent programs in the country.
Two coaches who have overseen maybe the two of the more impressive turnarounds in college basketball as far as where they are, where the program was when they got there versus where it is right now, when Auburn and Baylor play each other in the opener.
Absolutely.
Need to get to our first break of the afternoon. Love for you to join in. We're just getting started here on the Thursday Drive. Well, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Justin, just let everybody know what's the latest, what's going on, and what's coming up there at the Observer.
Yeah, so this week at the Observer, I did a breakdown of every game on Auburn's schedule, looking at SP Plus projections and kind of looking at what the numbers say about Auburn's season and their chances to have a winning record and all that good stuff. A lot of positive when you look at the numbers. A lot of positive trends for Auburn when it comes to what they've done with their roster here in this second window. Did a story on the return of Jani Broome and how that he's in line to have a huge year. I think the way Auburn's built their roster coming back this year, this upcoming season is perfect for what Jani Broome brings to the table. Got a podcast with Dan and Painter and our buddy Jordan Hill, who's been down at SEC Media Days, or I'm sorry, spring meetings in Destin, talking about scheduling and all that. I'll have a mailbag tomorrow. Have an interesting, a long debated question among Auburn fans that I'm doing the mailbag on tomorrow. A little historical look back, and then plenty of podcasts. It's not the Bill Cameron depth chart, but I'm doing my own depth chart prediction next week in the middle of the week as well. Dan's doing a mailbag next week, so
yeah.
You've got a ton of stuff next week at AuburnObserver.com. Subscribe, $6 a month or $60 a year. We email everything to you.
Yeah, and so. We got to talk to Jordan Hill yesterday. He's in Destin for the meetings, and he's covering Georgia for 24/7, and that's I would say it was a cool conversation because you get the perspective of somebody who's not covering Auburn on a day to day basis on some things, but it's Auburn Georgia. It's difficult to divest that from the conversation about the
possibilities of future scheduling,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely, which is one of the lead conversations over there,
Don't you find it interesting that when you talk about staying at 8 instead of going to 9, and potentially having a 1-7-7 instead of a 3-6-6 format for schedules? Do you find it interesting, as I do, that the main argument to go to 9 is like, hey, we need to protect rivalries like Auburn and Georgia. We heard
Alabama, Tennessee.
But you haven't heard as much from the Alabama, maybe the Tennessee side, but of like, oh, we need to keep playing Tennessee as much as I think
Alabama
does.
Well, Alabama fans are following Nick Saban's lead. They don't want to play Auburn, Tennessee, and LSU.
And I don't blame them. That LSU game makes so much money for the league that they're not going to let them go. Like, Alabama LSU is the one that you would drop, right? Like that's the one.
Had to make a change to Alabama's schedule, I think LSU would be the easiest one to drop. Yeah, if
Bill's giving me a sheet of paper, yeah, I think he's firing.
Well, it's just when you look, that's over the last 10 years, over the last 5 years. LSU is fourth in the SEC. Alabama's first. LSU is fourth, but Auburn and Tennessee over the last 10 years are tied for 10th. In the conference, mm-hmm. So what we talked about was, I think 5 years is more meaningful than 10. What does it matter what happened in 2013 or 2014? It's what you have done recently.
In Tennessee, it's just 1 year. It's just year that's gotten up in arms about it. And I think Tennessee is going to be built to last as a team that wins 9 or 10 games a year
probably
SEC.
Probably so. But we'll get into that. One thing I did want to mention is
I'm surprised they haven't fought as hard for Mississippi State as I thought they would. Because that's right down the road.
Oh yeah. But easy. There are a few things we can get into about this. Well, I'll get into the talk. What we've been hearing a lot of lately is a short term. You're hearing Greg Sankey saying the short term future and the long term future as far as scheduling is concerned. And what I think what just about everyone believes is going to happen is there will be an 8-game schedule for 2024. And I think my feeling is Commissioner Sankey wants that to be, all right, here's our 2024 schedule. It is not the ongoing schedule. It's an 8-game schedule for 2024. And I think when Texas and Oklahoma joined the league, they've both been pretty upfront that they like a 9-game schedule. When Texas and Oklahoma come into the league and are voting members, they're there, but they're not voting now. I believe it will go to a 9-game schedule. But here's what I hear today on what the 8-game schedule is. And Auburn fans, lock it in, man. Get ready for this. The simplest thing, the easiest way to do a 2024 schedule, since everyone already has preliminary schedules.
Is it something we've discussed before?
No, it's not.
Because my guesses would be, hold on, before Bill reveals the answer, my guesses would be you could treat Oklahoma like a new member of one division and Texas like a new member of the other division.
Absolutely, and you drop the rotational other division opponent. You keep the permanent. So Auburn would keep Georgia. Who's the next rotator? Is it
Florida? Well,
For 24?
Yeah, who's the SEC team on the schedule for 24?
You got Vandy this year,
Vandy,
right?
Vandy's second year this year.
Maybe Florida comes before Kentucky?
It may be. I think it is Florida.
I'm trying to think who –
So instead of Florida, you get either Texas or Oklahoma. But that means you would
Tennessee, actually. Tennessee's 18. Auburn played Tennessee in 2018, Florida in 19.
Okay.
So and Kentucky in 20.
So instead
Auburn,
of
Tennessee, it's Florida.
Oh, it's not Tennessee? Okay.
It's Florida. All right. Florida at home.
So instead of that, it would be, depending on who gets put in the West and who gets put in the East, it would be, let's say, Texas gets put in the West. So then you would have Alabama, Georgia, Ole Miss, Mississippi State on the road, Arkansas, LSU, Texas A&M, and Texas at home.
So Auburn would,
that would be your conference.
So you'd lose Georgia, pick up Texas.
No, you keep Georgia.
Oh, you lose Florida, pick up
you'd
Texas.
You'd lose
okay.
that rotational okay. team and keep the every year team.
Yeah, I don't think they would get rid of the rivalry.
So game. I mean, that's a very simple way to do an 8-game schedule. Keeps everybody allowing to play their non-conference opponents. It keeps all it does is bump the rotational team and plug in either Texas or Oklahoma.
Aside from the somewhat confusing geography of Oklahoma being an SEC East team, right, or vice versa. Yeah.
And I would
well, one of them. One of them would have to be
for the minimum disruption.
But I would think Oklahoma would go to the East. It's sort of they've got a traditional rivalry with Missouri.
And Texas has more
that
natural
they used
rivals
to have in the Big Eight.
Yeah, between Arkansas and A&M, Texas has more natural rivals in the West. And then you could also do a Texas Alabama game. You could do an LSU Alabama.
You've got
LSU Texas.
I mean, yeah, you see
that. That is what I'm hearing. We'll get for an 8-game schedule.
So. Auburn would probably pick that up as a home game. Good news there.
They'd pick
Auburn at
probably
Auburn hosting Texas.
Hosting Texas.
Yeah, that would be fun. You know, but
I'd make the I mean, and nothing against Florida, but I think there'd be
Texas
even more excitement
team,
about Texas coming in than Florida. Yeah, we're way late. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in here on the Thursday Drive.
You know. Who gets into a 12-team playoff, and would adding another conference game hurt us more than it helps us as a conference? I don't think so, but I do understand them wanting to play that out.
Oh, I do, but I also be ready for some ridicule from around the country, and I wonder if there'll be some people that are on the committee that don't in the back of their minds go, you guys didn't even want to play 9 games. We can't give you as much credit for the strength of schedule. Don't you think that's a possibility too?
That's a possibility for sure. So no divisions next year. They are mandating everybody still play one non-conference game against a Power 5 team, which makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. If you're only going to play 8 conference games.
I think everybody already has one scheduled.
I think so.
Double check on that, because you have so many of those teams that automatically play one anyway. So we were talking, Dan and I, we were talking on our podcast. I am of the opinion that you can go to 9. I think a cool schedule for me would be you go to 9, you play 2 Power 5 other conference teams, and then you can get one paycheck game. Everybody gets one. And I would.
Boy, you need to go work for Greg Sankey and try to convince some of these schools in the league that they're going to play 9 SEC games and 2 other Power 5. Fans would love it.
Yeah.
See, until
you lose some of those.
I was pushing for basically what Justin's calling for, except I would make the second Power 5 out of conference game optional. Like, you're expected to play 10 Power 5 games.
I would say you play 10. I would say you play not necessarily Power 5, but you don't play FCS schools.
That could work also. My thought is that with your non-conference.
No more than one.
Your non-conference. Kentucky. I'm going to give you Kentucky as an example. Kentucky has been adamant that they don't want to go to 9. They want to stay at 8. They are one of them, Mississippi State, are the two ones that have been pretty vocal about not wanting to go. Oddly enough, Missouri is a team that has been talking about wanting to go to 9. Mm-hmm. I find that very funny. But say Kentucky, it's like, okay, Kentucky, you got to play 8 every year, and then you have to play a power conference team. Kentucky will go, and they always do. Oh, we've got Louisville, and we're fine. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we'll play Louisville and we'll play 3 paycheck games and we're just trying to make a bowl. And it's like, that's a too easy of a workaround for me, you know?
Yep.
South Carolina, to South Carolina's credit, they play North Carolina usually. They're playing them again this year. They play other ones.
Florida and Georgia.
You already do it. Florida and Georgia.
South Carolina's got Clemson.
Florida, Georgia, and South Carolina schedule up. Like, Florida will play Utah. Georgia will play another marquee team. Georgia Tech's not that great, but I mean, South Carolina, I don't think anybody from a pure strength schedule standpoint would argue if South Carolina said, no, we got to play Clemson. Like, that's it. But what is South Carolina doing? They're playing North Carolina. They're playing other teams like that. So just go ahead and mandate it. Everybody does too. And you can add – it takes out that loophole, which I guess would just be the Kentucky loophole of like, nope, we're playing Louisville, that's fine. And it's like, no, but boost it up.
If you'd okay, if you could choose one or the other, would you rather 9 conference games or 2 guaranteed games against
– With 8?
Yeah, with 8. What would you rather
I'd
have?
Rather have 9.
I would too.
Okay. I'd rather have 9, and the 9-1 would be better than the 8-2.
Yeah.
Because
the 8-2 would give flexibility too, though, does, you know, for places yeah, that say they want
to
play.
At the end of the day, what 9 versus 8 is going to give you, 9 is going to protect more rivalries and will give you more games that people care about. It's cool.
That's what it, I mean, really, and that's where the sell to ESPN is. We've got, you know, you're not having to deal with an Auburn-Samford game.
See, as someone who enjoys competition and doesn't really care for the mismatches that we get in college football and out-of-conference games, you know, not that I want them eradicated or anything, but I feel like cutting back on them is a way. I would be much happier with 8 conference, 4 out-of-conference if the SEC had a rule requiring 2 games against the Power 5
out-of-conference.
They're not going
to
do that.
I'll put it to you this way, Dan. I think it's more valuable to make sure you play Georgia every year if you're Auburn, than playing another Cal or another Baylor or another
I'm with you guys where I would rather have 9.
But if you're going to 8, do this.
I think 9.
If you're going to stay at 8,
but
I like
you're
going to
see
idea.
Some that are just looking for the worst Power 5 teams they can find.
The 9.
And yeah, everybody will be looking for that.
The 9-1-1-1 plan would be 9 conference games, 1 required Power 5 out of conference game.
I'd let you do whatever you want with
here's
the last
two. Here's the funny thing about
that's what I mean. No, that's what I mean. So it can be the other two can
it's
be
9-1-2.
Yeah,
basically.
It's 9-1-2 works.
You've got 2 wild cards.
Now, the funny thing about that, Bill, is that you know you're like everybody will try to find the worst Power 5 team. It's so cyclical now, and you schedule so far in advance
you
that
think
it's just
you've
like,
got a patsy.
I mean, there's
some
teams,
years down
there's some
the road.
Teams that have lined up Kansas that thought they were just going to go in and smoke them every year. But like, they're going to run into a team, not a championship contender, but they're going to run into a team that's pretty feisty now. And I think some teams that want to schedule Vanderbilt or teams like that, like maybe Duke. There was that run where Duke was you know getting ranked and stuff like that. So I agree. If you stay at 8, give me 2 permanent 9-conference spots. I would love a 9 and a 2, and I want to keep a like I'm not like Nick Saban and say like, hey, we need to play nothing but Power 5 teams or we'll never play any of these other teams. I think, again, the economy of college football, it is so beneficial to have these paycheck games to help keep Group of 5 and FCS football alive. And like, if you don't do that, it's just going to be harder for them to exist in a world where TV money is just going to be fully concentrated on the big conferences.
Bill, do you think a significant portion of the league would go for 8 conference games, 2 required out of conference games against Power 5 teams? So 10 games against the Power 5 total, 8 conference, 2 out of conference.
A significant portion? I think half the league probably would.
Because I'd be happier with 8-4 if you told me 2 of those 4 games are against Power 5 opponents.
Well, you know me. I'm the grumpy old man. I want to keep the.
I'd rather have nine than 8. But if you're telling me it's got to stay at 8 for this reason and that reason, it's like fine. 2 of those 4.
If it's got to be eight, I'm fighting like crazy.
Because I'm with Justin where it's like nothing against Kentucky, but if they want to go Louisville and 3 overmatched opponents, right? Like, or I
well, mean, that's,
for a while,
that's how you can keep getting to bowls and winning 8 games a year.
For a while, Georgia,
which is what Kentucky's done for the last 5 years under Mark Stoops,
they've scheduled up. But there were years where it was Georgia Tech and 3 teams that didn't have a chance.
Yeah,
right. I mean, there were
before they were where they are right now, talent wise.
Yeah, I mean, there were years in the past where I just think that discouraging that.
Don't give me how tough Georgia's schedule's been over the last decade.
They're doing better now. I mean, they're scheduling marquee out of conference games now.
This year's schedule is dreadful.
Oh. Yeah. No,
they're going to walk in. They're going to walk in with their eyes closed backwards into the playoff this year again.
Yeah, I mean, there's the folks who do the percent, you know, the win percentage indexes and your S&Ps and what have you. Like they've like Tennessee's the only game that they think you know could be somewhat competitive, and I don't know where that game is off the top of my head, but I don't think
is that in
Knoxville?
That's in Knoxville.
Okay, so there's one game that people think. I mean, to be in a position where you're an overwhelming favorite in 11 of 12 games on paper right now, as a major conference team, it's
good news for Georgia is that they are playing better and moving forward. Like they're scheduling up. They had scheduled Oklahoma, and that's going to be a conference game now. So.
Florida State and Ohio State. We talked about that on the podcast with Jordan. You know, some of the teams they've got on their schedule coming up. Florida State, Ohio State,
They've done Notre Dame recently.
Penn State maybe as well. I think they've got Penn State as well. So I mean, they've got some superpowers coming up on the schedule.
We need to get to our final break of hour number one. Again, love for you to join in. Give us your thoughts. 334-321-1390 here on the Thursday Drive. Welcome in. Hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. Drew at the controls. And hour number two of the drive is brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Love for you to join in, and you can call the Kia of Auburn hotline. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one, and the number to get you through is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, which is available however you listen to podcasts. You can go to your favorite podcasting platform, search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com or RadioAlabama.net and use the podcast centers. It's all there. It's all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Hour number one, we talked about quite a few things. We do have a special segment coming up here in hour number two. Is at the bottom of the hour. Justin Kirby, Auburn senior outfielder, will join us. He's been with us throughout the season. Tiger takes different days because of scheduling and things like that. Now that Auburn is hosting regional starting tomorrow, he will be with us today at 5:30.
Really excited to get to talk to Auburn outfielder Justin Kirby with the team on the verge playing a regional at home. This is his first taste of postseason baseball. He was talking about maybe he went to the NCAAs. You know what? We'll ask him.
Yeah,
at 5:30 about his experience with postseason baseball. But I'm recalling from an interview he gave us earlier in the season that this represented a chance to go to the NCAAs as a college baseball player for the first time. So maybe he's been before. Bill's efforting that at the moment, but really looking forward to the mindset. And sort of, how the team is feeling, knowing they're going to get to play, not just in the postseason, but at home against Penn on Friday night.
334-321-1390. We talked some baseball. Don't know if we'll get a chance today, but sometime before the Auburn's game against Penn tomorrow night, we can let you hear some of the comments. Butch Thompson met with the media today. Bryson Ware, Christian Herbertholtz, who said he feels great and feels like he can go at least 50 or 60 pitches when he is called on this weekend. That's really, really good news.
And the so we'll have some baseball coverage at the bottom of the hour with Justin Kirby. Looking forward to that. During the show, we've had some pretty significant football news break regarding what the SEC is doing in 2024.
That is right.
The SEC putting out a statement. It's now live on SECSports.com, among other places, with quotes from Commissioner Sankey about the about how the decision was made. He goes out of his way to explain that the 8-game conference schedule the SEC will play in 2024 with Texas and Oklahoma is a 1-year schedule that will provide. In fact, I'll read Sankey's quote. Creating a 1-year schedule will provide a longer on-ramp to manage football scheduling around existing non-conference commitments of our members. It will also provide additional time to understand the impact of an expanded college football playoff and engage with our media partners as we determine the appropriate long-term plan for SEC football scheduling.
I mean, he touched on everything right there. It's an on-ramp. He didn't say the ramp's going to end after 1 year, but that's what he would prefer. But it gives them time to negotiate, to see if some of the concerns that schools had about how it could affect the making the expanded playoffs.
Continuing Greg Sankey's quote, during this time of change, our fans will continue to enjoy traditional rivalries and begin to see new matchups presented by the addition of two historically successful football programs to the SEC, unquote. The statement also announces that on June 14th, the SEC Network will present a special primetime show.
They're going to unveil the schedule?
Unveiling the 2024 opponents for each team in the season. So we will learn more about what the schedule looks like in
That makes sense. I mean, there's
2 weeks on the SEC Network.
There's been so much discussion about it. That's what everybody wants to see.
And I remember the SEC Network had the special before the 2020 season when they had to change to a 10-game conference schedule. They unveiled everyone's new opponents.
I will say this. They are used to revealing the schedule like during the middle of a – like it's like usually like in September. So mm-hmm. At least doing it in the summer makes sense.
And I agree with what you speculated on earlier, Bill. I think it's going to be your division opponents – I think it's going to be your historic opponent. I think it's my guess.
I don't know. Now that he talked about balance,
it sounds like they're ripping it up. Ooh.
Yeah, now that he mentioned balance is the first thing.
And the rivalry.
There are a couple of teams who it's not that balanced. If you want, again, all right, look, I've got the last 5 years total right here. What you would like to do, 16 teams, you'd like your average to be around the middle, okay?
Oh, so here's the exercise.
So if you're playing two teams at the top, you should get two teams at the bottom for the last few years as well. You know, you see what I'm saying? If Auburn continues to have Alabama and Georgia, which I'd be shocked if they don't, then they should probably get, Auburn fans are going to be thrilled with this because you get tired of some of these teams. You get Arkansas, South Carolina, and Vandy.
Is there a way to do everyone gets four from the top and four from the bottom? And that's your schedule? That's your 8-game conference schedule? Like, I'm going to give you – let's use the last 5 years.
You mean four from the upper eight and four from the bottom eight?
Exactly right. That's what I think. That's the 8-game.
Well, Auburn would have to lose somebody then.
Auburn? What do you mean?
Auburn's already got Alabama, Georgia, LSU in the top. That's three of the top four.
They don't have to play LSU.
Okay. All right.
Designate two rivals and make sure everybody plays four teams from the top half of the conference and four teams
from
the bottom.
Here is your top, your upper
eight. That's your
eight-game
schedule.
Your upper eight over the last 5 years is Alabama, Georgia. Now, going by wins, I'm going to have to throw Oklahoma and Texas in here as well. But Alabama, Georgia.
I like last 5 years more than last 10. I think it's a more accurate rolling average.
The winningest schools over the last 5 years are Alabama, Georgia, Oklahoma, LSU, Florida, Kentucky, Texas A&M, and Texas.
Yeah, I think you give Auburn four of those. Everyone gets four of those. So you pick, you know, what four would work for Auburn. I think that's how you do it. Alabama and Georgia are games that have to be played. Give everyone.
If you're trying for balance and you get the top two, you should get two near the bottom of that top eight as well.
Get Vanderbilt.
I'm saying A&M and Texas. You don't need 1, 2, 3, 4.
What about A&M and Texas?
That's what I mean. A&M and Texas are 7 and 8. So you get 1, 2, 7, 8. You try to balance it out as well as you can. As what if he's talking about balance and keeping rivalries? Yep. Keeping rivalries gives you Alabama and Georgia, but then you need a break there in that upper eight, and then you fill in the bottom eight.
I think
however.
You should have two of the very bottom ones as well. If you're talking about balance, like if I have one and two, I need to get I don't need 13 and 14, but I need to get close to 13 and 14.
Again, what I said is you can put numbers by every one of these and just add up the numbers, and everybody tries to get as close to the same number as possible.
And you can begin that by giving them, okay, these are the two rivals they have to play, and then we're going to figure out the other six to balance it.
So, for example, signing the number one team 16 points all the way down to the number 16 team getting 1 point. Mm-hmm. All right, so Auburn's got 31 points right there at the start with Alabama and Georgia, with the top two teams. So if you want, an average of 8.5 for eight games, what is that, 68?
By the way, I think, and I just made that up on the fly.
So you want 68, you only got 37 more points for your six other opponents.
And if that's,
that's tough.
Playing Vanderbilt.
Maybe it's just
as close to it as you're not going to get everybody with 68.
What do you think of assigning two rivals to every team? Like, what do you think of that number?
It depends on teams.
You want to do two or three?
If Texas, you know, Texas, no, Oklahoma.
This is why
Oklahoma,
the 3-6-6 makes better sense. You got to, that's why a
some
fair
teams have
makes
two,
sense.
Three. Some teams only
just have
one.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do three rivals and balance it out with the other five games if you wanted to, and still shoot for four top, four bottom if you wanted to. I mean,
leave that up to the schools. I'd leave it up to the ADs, the administration. Who are your traditional rivals? And all right, here we go, and we're going to work from that. Let's get to the Kia of Auburn hotline, and Joshua is up first. Hey, Joshua.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Pretty good.
Hey, I just got off work, so I hadn't been able to really keep up with much. But from what y'all are talking about, it sounds like y'all are pretty confident they're going to do the 8-game SEC schedule?
So well, for one, Greg Sankey has said that 2024 will be an 8-game schedule, using that as an on-ramp to future scheduling.
Yeah, we have news from the SEC in the last hour and a half about what they've voted on, and they've decided in 2024, without committitting to anything beyond 24, they're going to play an 8-game conference schedule with Texas and Oklahoma in the league.
I do.
And in 2 weeks on the SEC Network, they're going to unveil what opponents are on everyone's schedule.
And as Bill said earlier, I think the desire for probably more teams, especially when Texas and Oklahoma come into the league, also probably the desire of Sankey, once they can get the money sorted out, is to get to 9, but it's not going to be next year.
Yeah, I mean, that's my thing. Is like I loved 2020 when we had 10 SEC games, but I at least want 9. I mean, yeah. I just feel like you need to make the schedule more worth it every game as possible, and still have to schedule 2 Power 5 teams on top of that, because these little cupcake games, they got to go. The playoff is expanding. And, you know, so if you're going to be the SEC and pump your chest, you got to make your schedule.
Well, and fans, you know, from the fan standpoint, everything's becoming more expensive. Ticket prices are going up. Cost of streaming services, cost of cable, cost of all, you know, it's all going up.
Yeah, if you're going to be paying this much money for season tickets, you want to at least make sure it's you're maximizing the value of it.
Yeah, cut back on the mismatches if you can.
Well, I just wanted to see. Yeah, that makes sense. I could understand. It's just for that 24 season, but hopefully after that they'll at least go to 9 games, I would hope. You know, teams that are worried about having to play a tougher schedule, well, Auburn's had to play a tough schedule for
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
I mean, it's time to get on board and just, you know, we got to play Alabama and Georgia every year. So it's, you know. Whatever.
And I like to point out, Joshua, that the team's upset about having to play a tougher schedule happily accept the same share of the money from the broadcast contract as the teams that
expanded and as the teams that win the playoff era. If in an expanded playoff era, if you are a team in the SEC or the Big Ten and you get as much money as you do for being a member as an SEC or Big Ten, and you are working your schedule and you are building everything to just make a bowl game. Get out of here, brother.
Yeah,
you ain't built for this life.
Yeah, no, I don't. You're not crazy.
The lights are too bright for you now.
I would hope that schools like that are outvoted, at the very least, right? You would hope that they're the minority of the conference
Alabama,
be able to dictate policy.
Alabama's gotten a lot of the attention this week because Saban is apparently throwing up red flags to the 3 that he has gotten that Alabama was set to get in this original format. I'm sure there are other ones that have maybe objections to their, but at the end of the day, it's like, are you a real contender or not? Like,
I think I hit on something here with Bill with not suggesting 4 top 8s and 4 bottom 8s.
No, I'm not worried about 4 top 8s. What I'm trying to do is take as many of the games that you're used to that you think are big games, put them in there, and then see how many points that is and who's left.
Okay, so you're trying to designating rivalries and stuff?
Look, when it first came out that Texas and Oklahoma joined the conference, I sent an email to the SEC office going, here's an idea, the 366. Not that that was my idea and that's where they got it from. It's something that everybody can see.
Yep.
Well, and they've been using the 3 permanent opponent model in basketball since the addition of A&M in Missouri.
See, that was when the concept of the pod system first was invented. It was, the 366 is what everybody was talking about.
Right.
When they first started talking about
people got it confused with pods and thinking everybody in that pod has to play the same teams. No.
No.
No, you don't. It's the way basketball's done. I mean, it just makes sense.
Makes too much sense.
Do we need to get to break? Yeah, I'll tell you what. Let's get to break. Daniel, hang on. You'll be up first when we come back here on the Thursday Drive.
A certain level of football, and I feel like that's
the whole point of scheduling these teams in spring games is not to have a competitive game. It's to, like, get your value out of
right.
it.
Right.
So. Who cares?
You know, opportunity for fans, alums, and stuff. I mean, and make a little money.
But it probably can't.
That'd be
replace.
A good way to give your FCS teams.
That's
games.
What I'm but talking
if you're,
about.
But if you're paying $1.5 million for these teams to come in right now, like, you're not going to pay $1.5 million for them to come in the spring, are you?
No. You're not paying some of those $1.5 million either.
But that is the shock. Like, UMass is probably getting somewhere in the 1.5-2 range, right? Like to come in.
Yeah, I'm talking about playing Alabama State.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
You know,
your FCS games, you can give them a few hundred thousand, yeah, or split the gate or whatever, yeah, or whatever you want to do. And then in the fall, you can play a group of five team, or, you know, and then those group of five teams can play FCS teams and just kind of keep it cycling.
Oh, okay, yeah. No, I mean, I'm fine with keeping them in the fall, too. Like, that's where I
just one, maybe. Yeah,
I mean,
I would be good with
Bill,
getting
I think Bill wants them gone entirely from the schedule in the fall.
And just who's want, that? What?
FCS opponents in the fall.
Like, oh, yeah, rather, yeah, yeah.
Well, not entirely. I mean, if you've got, if you're playing at least 10 Power 5 teams,
I'll point this
I have
out.
No problem
I'll point
with,
this out.
With an FCS game.
I'll point this out.
I don't
out.
Think two, though.
I'll point this out, though. Of the three non-Power 5 teams Auburn plays on its schedule this year, Samford, UMass, and New Mexico State, I wholeheartedly believe Samford's the best team out of those three.
Well, I mean, there's quality FCS football. The highest level of the FCS is, I mean, North Dakota State used to routinely beat up on
I don't.
On teams
I know people
from,
haven't been looking ahead that much, but if you don't know how bad UMass is, yeah, good grief, y'all. This is the worst FBS team in the country. They're probably not half the FCS could beat them. But there is a large chunk of FBS teams or FCS teams that would take UMass to the woods.
And now the game's at 2:30. You know, a development
that melt,
just
man.
Yeah,
they're
a development
melt.
That just came
I know,
down.
I know not all UMass's players are from New England, but like,
yeah,
they're I not going to be used to it.
No, it is a you know it's another drawback for them. I know some fans aren't crazy about the you know the 2:30 game instead of the night game, but I think that the opportunity to be on ESPN is
homecoming
huge.
Being a night game is interesting.
In the first you know first,
that, yeah homecoming that didn't happen. Also used to come when it was so hot.
Yeah, that's also true. I'm fine with homecoming being that last game.
Yeah,
that last
it
the,
used
the,
to
the
be
Mexico
the last
game,
non-conference
yeah.
game.
And I guess they just had people since it was around Thanksgiving. It was hard to keep
yeah.
keep,
well,
keep people
already,
around.
It's already right. Senior Day. Right? A lot of places don't do Senior Day.
All right,
coming
so
on the same game.
I love working the numbers when you're talking about balance. All right, I did this during the break. If you took Auburn's upcoming schedule, I said the perfect number is 68. Auburn's conference schedule for this year.
You've assigned a 16 to Alabama and a 1 to
16 to Alabama down to Vandy at 1.
Yeah.
Auburn's 8 conference games this year total. 68 points. That is the supposedly yeah. the most
the median.
The yes, you get three of the real top ones, and you get a few of the bottom ones. You may not get five of the top eight, but you get three of the top four, and you get more of the bottom.
Well, it works out to an average opponent of 8.5, which
right.
is right in the center of the
Alabama's
league.
Average. By the way, for this coming year,
yeah.
total is 62. So that yeah, their schedule needs to be
works out a little bit lower.
They need to toughen that schedule up a little bit.
And
for the following
I tossed
year.
Out the possibility since Bill was concocting ways to balance schedules for 24. I said we should also make sure Texas or Oklahoma sees as much of the league
as
possible.
Well, actually, Auburn's that was for the 17. Yeah, I substituted Texas for Texas A&M, and that's where it became exactly 60. That's right. It was 69 with. With A&M, we substituted Texas for A&M. So you drop A&M next year, you add Texas, you keep everybody else that you've got on this schedule, and you've got the balanced schedule.
And for folks you know just tuning in, the SEC has announced there will be an 8-game schedule in 2024, and 2 weeks from today on the SEC Network, they will reveal...
2 weeks from yesterday.
That's right, 2 weeks from yesterday, the 14th. Mm-hmm. They will reveal who will be on everyone's schedule in 2024, and we're expecting, I mean, among the things, what rivalries will be preserved and what do they do with Oklahoma and Texas?
Let's get back to the Kia of Auburn Hotline, and Yellowhammer is up next. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. Well, you know, you're talking about scheduling, and for years, Auburn and every school, really, a big-time school, has always wanted to try to schedule a call them what you want, a cupcake, a pushover, mm-hmm. a glorified scrimmage. But, you know, one or two of those at least, because you can't wade through one tough, brutal game after another for the whole season. It just nobody can do that, and everybody has always tried to strategize around, well, let's take a break here and here, and there's an open date, and we have a cupcake here. And so I'm just wondering, too, though, in this brave new world, what's going to happen to all those lesser beings, you know, that we used to put in the schedule, and it was a good thing for them. They picked up a paycheck even though they were going to lose, but you know it was a different world there. So what's going to happen now?
I mean, that is a great question where it's like I think you need to keep them around because you need to keep them kind of afloat. Like there's a you know group of five and FCS teams you know rely on that money to kind of make it happen. It's kind of built into the framework. So if you outlaw them, I think you would be in danger of just like, hey, what does Group of Five or FCS football like look like long term? I think this just won't be that as many teams playing. But hopefully they don't go in that direction. I think you're still going to have room for paychecks every year.
We got some more news out of Destin with the SEC meetings and now a policy released in the last hour or so. A new field storming policies for the SEC.
Oh, have they come up. They have come up with something. Now?
I've got something from Dellinger here. Let's listen to this. Each member institution must provide security and uniformed law enforcement presence around each team and game officials before, during, and after the event to prevent contact with spectators. The area where teams and officials are dropped off in their path to and from team areas must be secure and not accessible to the general public.
Okay, what's new so far?
Let's see what I can find here. in the event of a field or court rush, use of uniformed law enforcement personnel and equipment is required.
Was that not a case already?
To secure a clear path for the other team.
Yeah.
The visiting team shall forego the post-game handshake line and immediately move inside the barricade and get to the locker room as soon as possible. Let me see here.
So they're putting in barricades.
Yeah.
Every institution is going to provide the SEC with a detailed field/court rush management
plan.
And they will
that makes sense.
Discourage a communication plan that discourages students and fans from entering the field of play.
Yeah, that works.
They will. Yeah. Okay, how about this?
They've been doing that forever.
Institutional fines will now be paid directly to the opposing institution.
Oh!
$100,000 the first
Who cares?
Offense. $250,000 second offense. Third
Wait,
in
hold
each.
On, hold so, on, hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. Time out. How much of a flex is that? You beat it. Say Alabama
here,
beats Tennessee,
it.
And like
it's worth
here's $100,000 for your troubles.
That's right.
Don't want to complain. Yeah, it's like giving people money because you beat them in football.
You know
is
what
like
you could do?
The biggest own in the
you
world.
Could, that is great. You could have that as an incentive for fans. It's like here's the collection for after the game.
I mean. At least when they had to give it to charity, it was doing something good.
That's right.
$100,000 to the opposing institution for the first
offense. You're gonna have teams. You're gonna have Vandy going. Please rush the field. Yeah. Rush the field.
$250,000 for your emotional labor.
Ooh. Oh God.
Member institutions may adopt a policy that allows fans to celebrate on the playing surface once all visiting team personnel and game officials have safely exited the field or
yeah,
court.
Clemson allows
that's a good
everybody
idea.
On
that's
the
a good,
field,
which is something we've wondered about the Clemson policy. I think that maybe provides a real way to cut down on storming by saying, all right, once this team's off the field, then go out there and have your party.
All right, Justin Kirby joins us on the other side. Stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
Turn your home into restricted.
Drive continues. Continues. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. And right now we have another special edition of Tiger Takes brought to you by the Alsobrook Law Group. When you need legal assistance, call Zach. He's got your back. Or find him on the web at alsolaw.com. And we're pleased to be joined once again by Auburn outfielder Justin Kirby. Last week, we couldn't speak with Justin live because the team was on the way up to Birmingham. And now Auburn getting ready to play back at home. Justin, good to talk to you again. Last time we spoke, you know, we were looking at the talking about the possibility of it being the final time for you guys, and especially for some of you guys out there on the field over at Plainsman Park. But you get another opportunity, so congratulations.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. We're coming back home, and yeah, it's just getting started now.
Yeah, now, we were looking a while ago, and if I'm not mistaken, this will be your first NCAA postseason, right?
Correct. We, the only, I guess, semi-postseason experience I ever had at Kent State was my freshman year going to the conference tournament. It was a quick 0-2 for the Golden Flashes, but so it was pretty short lived. But we didn't have a 2020 is 2020, you know, pandemic and all.
Right.
2021, we didn't have a conference tournament, and then last year the MAC changed it to like the top four teams have a tournament, and whoever wins the regular season is the host. So we finished fifth last year. So it's taken until the fifth year, but I'm finally getting to experience a real college baseball postseason, and I couldn't be more excited.
Yeah, and I hope you get to take in some of the atmosphere there Friday night. Seems like it should be fun. I was there last year when Auburn hosted in regional play, and that UCLA game was just a blast to see, and looking forward to a sellout crowd Friday night. What has the what's the week been like so far? It's a little different for you guys compared to the other teams because they're on the road and you're getting to stay home and sleep in your beds. What can you tell us about the preparation thus far for the weekend?
Well, definitely nice to be able to sleep on our own beds, not having to worry about being in a hotel or, you know, on that kind of schedule. But with the exception of, you know, what sleeping in your own bed and having your home crowd in front of you, that's kind of where the home field advantage kind of comes to an end, and that's kind of by design.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so different from other weekends during the regular season when we kind of Auburn baseball is kind of in charge of how things go down, and, you know, are we going to hit on the field? Are we going to take in and out? Are we going to do stuff like that? Basically, as of this morning at about 10 o'clock a.m., which is when we had our practice, this is basically the NCAA's field. And, you know, it's kind of funny. It almost feels like we are at the Auburn Regional. We just happen to also be Auburn. So, but yeah, it's kind of all scripted out by the NCAA. They're, by design, they don't want there to be too much of like a home field advantage, which, I mean, personally, I'm kind of don't really understand, just because isn't that kind of the whole idea of being good enough to host a regional? But that's beside the point. I don't make the rules. I'm just here to enjoy it. But, you know, it's a little different. It's weird to have opposing teams use your dugout, because that's what's going to happen tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I think as far as like the locker room goes, we can only use that before the game. Basically, once, you know, on a typical game day, we'll go in the locker room, we'll hang out there, go out, get ready to stretch for BP, hit batting practice, and then come back in and hang out in the locker room for like those 45 minutes while the other team's hitting BP. From what I understand, we won't be able to do that because like the other team we're playing does not also have access to a locker room. So we basically have to be just kind of ready to go with our stuff out, have everything we ever need for the entire game as soon as we leave for batting practice. So it's going to be a little bit different, but I mean, I think we'll manage.
Yeah, of course, it's not, I understand they want to give everybody as fair an opportunity as possible, but there's nothing they can do about the crowds. And it's not like everybody has a situation where you can force the other three teams to stay in some dorms like Kentucky has.
Yeah, so I saw that. I didn't really know all the details. I think I saw like a TikTok from a kid who plays for West Virginia. And, I mean, obviously there's no context, but I just saw them like walking around these empty dorms of Kentucky. I'm like, well, I guess it could be worse.
Yeah, no kidding. Before we get into more of the details and get your thoughts on the teams here and the regional and everything, how was the outing to the lake?
Oh, it was great. We're kind of unlucky. I felt like as soon as I got into the water, there was a big fat cloud that blocked out that sun, so it was a little chilly.
It was cool, man. I mean, it really was.
Yeah, it got a little crisp out there, but you know, it had been a long time since I had gone swimming, and I kind of forget how just how many calories you burn while you're swimming and treading water. And I had made the mistake of not eating before I went. So then I was running really low on the whole food situation. So I was getting kind of hangry. But luckily we did have a lot of food. So once we made it to when the food got delivered, I kind of became a normal person again. But
and then you got to wait. You got to wait like 40-45 minutes, Bill. What's the
used to be 30? Yeah,
wait 30 minutes.
What it is these days.
Before you get back in the water. They're
yeah,
testing.
I was out by that point. I was too cold, but at least I felt like a normal person after I had eaten. You know, things were getting a little hairy there for a minute, but
had you ever been to Lake Martin before?
No, that was my first time.
It's a cool little. I mean,
that little.
Yeah, man-made little chunk of water we got up there, not too far from campus. It's in demand property around that thing at the moment.
Yeah, it was nice.
Well, and it's one of the things. I mean, Butch was talking about, you know, just trying to give you guys a bit of a break and sort of to recharge. I know a lot of folks were bummed that, you know, you're out of the SEC tournament that quickly. But how do you feel about the way everybody's responded? I mean, sort of a chance now to try to get everybody as healthy as possible and hit it full go tomorrow for the regionals.
Yeah, and the SEC tournament is, I think, to use a phrase that Coach Thompson likes to use, it's a great opportunity to sharpen your axe. But I think that, you know, ultimately, and maybe I'm not supposed to say this, but like I think that the SEC tournament was our best opportunity to really secure a regional host, which I think was, you know, something that we didn't even think was attainable halfway through the year. So going into the SEC tournament, we were like, all right, man, like we're already basically there, but if we could win a game, then we're almost for sure going to host. So I think that was really the goal. And then obviously you want to win every single game you play. But I think we kind of ran out of steam a little bit towards the end, not to make excuses, but we finished two games in a row at about 12:30 at night. And I think that kind of adds up after a while. Your body really has no chance to recover, and that kind of gets compounded. And so it's tough to play those tournaments when, you know, you really have a lot of outside factors, I guess, kind of making it more difficult. But that being said, we do now have the opportunity to get everyone back to full health and everyone feeling good and for the most important part of our season heading into tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, we were sort of wondering about momentum, Justin, because it's a funny thing in baseball, and you guys played so well down the stretch, and it's a great second half of conference play. But at the same time, maybe a week-long break between the end of the SEC tournament and the beginning of regional play is something that can recharge you guys and give you a chance to rest and recover and be the best possible team in regional play.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's a good balance, you know, as far as the tournament goes. There's a good balance between, you know, not like just doing going 1-0 in the tournament, and then you have like a week and a half, or feels like 2 weeks of just like no baseball. But on the flip side, you know, you're playing like 5 or 6 games in that tournament, just kind of like running on fumes. Then you head into your regional, just like, are you feeling burnt out? Are you feeling exhausted? Like, do you want your break then, right when you need to be, you know, as hungry as possible? So I think that all things considered, we kind of got in and got out at a very good time, secured enough momentum, secured our hosting spot. But also now it's go time. We're all ready.
Yeah, and I was mentioning getting healthy. It was great to hear Christian Herberholtz today talking about how good he feels. And I mean, if he can come back and give you 50-60 quality pitches this weekend, that's just a huge plus.
Yeah, huge. He threw live in practice a couple days ago, looked good, looked like he was back to himself. And I think that, you know, he's chomping at the bit to get back out there.
All right. What do you know? How much have you guys been watching Penn? I mean, from everything that, we've been able to see, they're pretty competitive. They really took South Carolina to the limit a couple of times, I believe, in the opening series of the season. And they've got some pretty good pitching numbers.
Yeah, they're going to be a really competitive team. They're going to come out and want to make some noise. And I think that kind of the message about them is just obviously don't take anyone lightly, but particularly anyone from, you know, there's always a lot to say about the Ivy League or whatever, mm-hmm. but they're here to, I mean, they're not just happy to be here. They want to make some noise. They want to ruin someone else's season just like we do. So, I mean, we're not taking anyone lightly. Continue just to play our game. And it's, you know, Coach Gross talked to us today about he was imparting some of his big league postseason knowledge mm-hmm. on us. And one of the best pieces of advice he said that he had heard is basically the fact that you are in the playoffs means that what you have done up until this point is good enough because, and you know, going forward, what that really means is now is not the time to try to do more just because the moment feels bigger. And I think that that's a great mentality to have. And it kind of goes back to my, ultimate kind of principle mentality, just like my own kind of culture is like, if you're as good as you say you are, if you're as good as you think you are, then you don't have, then just be yourself, play your game. You don't have to do anything spectacular and it's going to take care of itself. So I think that that's kind of our mentality as a team. What we've done up until this point, like our body of work is good enough. It has worked. We have a winning recipe that we've kind of established, especially in the second half, to just take that into the postseason and win one pitch at a time, play a full 27 outs, and then however far that takes us is however far that takes us.
Yeah, and Justin, I would think that you have a pretty unique perspective on how hungry some of these mid-major teams coming to this regional are, as someone who played mid-major college baseball for a couple of years in your career. But a team like Penn, that won the Ivy League tournament, a team like Samford, and the way they're playing, I mean, Auburn had to prepare earlier in the season to play Samford in a midweek game. I believe that game was canceled for weather, mm-hmm. I think. But
that was when it monsooned at
right. Hoover. Right, so you couldn't play the game in Samford, but you guys were getting ready to play against them, so you're familiar with how good Samford can be. And then there's this Southern Miss team that just won the Sun Belt tournament. It's a four-bid league, the Sun Belt, and Southern Miss was able to outlast teams, including Coastal, to win that one. I mean, I think you can help make sure this team understands how good the mid-major opponents in this regional are, because you've been that was your life for a couple of years in college baseball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just, I mean, I can kind of speak on, you know, the talent level. You know, the best at a mid-major is still going to be similar to the best in the SEC. And I can speak to, you know, the mentality of all these mid-major teams is that you get pretty tired about hearing about the almighty SEC, right. And all you want to do is just prove to the world that you can compete, you can be better than them. And I think that this regional is really going to, I think, open some eyes to some people about how, you know, competitive mid-major baseball is. That being said, it doesn't change anything that we do. I think that we are still one of the most battle-tested teams in the country. And I can honestly say now, after experiencing both, like, the SEC is real. It is a gauntlet going through that 10-week period, but that's not to say that there isn't always some very sneaky and very competitive teams coming out of those mid-major conferences.
No, and I would tell, and not to the players, but just to the fans that are already looking ahead to the matchup against Southern Miss, tomorrow is critically important. You lose that first game in a regional, and you really have dug yourself a hole. So it's very, very important. And the crowd, I can't wait to see the crowd. Hey, we were wondering, someone had asked about the, have you heard, is there any possibility of the eagle flying? Or is that, I was wondering if that might be part of the NCAA's impartiality. It needs to fly before every game, if at all.
I mean, I sure hope so. I know that I'm sure that BT is behind the scenes, or Rhett is behind the scenes lobbying as best as he can, because, I mean, that's the coolest thing ever. I can't even imagine, like, the regional atmosphere will be awesome regardless.
Yep.
But if you have a live eagle coming and flying around the field right before, I mean, come on now. That's the coolest thing ever.
Oh, no kidding. Well, yeah, I'm hoping I'm going to leave early so I can be there for opening pitch. That's the tough thing about doing a show till 6. But, man, we really, really enjoy spending time with you. Hopefully next week we're talking about a Super Regional. So, best of luck this week. Before we let you go one more time, let folks know how they can follow you.
Instagram _JustinKirby_ and Twitter is @JKirbs15. And yeah, appreciate it, guys. It's really exciting to be in this situation, and I'm going to do whatever I can to make sure that we win this thing so that this doesn't have to be my last interview.
Absolutely. Best of luck,
Justin. That's the real motivation.
I hear you.
Got to keep talking to us, Justin.
All right.
Great stuff.
Justin Kirby joining us. Tiger Takes presented by the Alsobrook Law Group on the web at alsolaw.com. Need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Thursday Drive. Welcome back in. Final few minutes here on the Thursday Drive. And our thanks. Yeah, Justin Kirby does such a good job.
Yeah.
I mean, he's... Great interview, and yeah, really looking forward to the regional tomorrow. 1 o'clock is the opener between Samford and Southern Miss, then Auburn and Penn at 6 tomorrow over at Samford Stadium, Hitchcock Field at Plainsman Park.
Yeah, when's the first game tomorrow? 1 o'clock, I think, is the first pitch for, yeah. And so that they'll be. There'll be some baseball all day long. Hopefully, weather agrees with what's the forecast like tomorrow. Bill's supposed to be
a
little steamy, but not a real chance.
Less than 20% or less chance of rain. I mean, okay. So it's going to be a little humid, but it's going to be great baseball weather. So looking forward to that. So yeah, it's been a fun show today with Justin in here and news breaking. I mean, we at least know that for sure. That it will be an 8-game SEC football schedule for 2024. And now we'll see how balanced it is in less than 2 weeks when they announce the opponents on the schedule. Now, things can change, obviously, where, you know, Tennessee has improved quite a bit from where people would have projected them last year. Auburn's hoping to be in that same situation. So things can change quite a bit. You know, in 2 years, but if they're going to go ahead and announce now, it's got to be based on some period of time or what they project teams to be by 2024.
Yeah, we got the confirmation, though, that the SEC, at least for 1 year, is going to stick with the 8-game conference schedule for 2024, and we'll know by the middle of the month in a primetime special that will air on the SEC Network. We will learn what the schedules look like, or at least who is on the schedules for each team in 2024 with Texas and Oklahoma as part of the league. We also learned about the Auburn Baylor game going to take place. Auburn basketball.
Auburn basketball
going to face a recent national champion in the Baylor Bears. And
this is a pretty neutral site,
Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Which also I didn't
mention. Doesn't get much more neutral than that.
Well, if you've seen the first two seasons of the Fargo TV show.
Yeah, and there's supposed to be another one.
There's one coming soon. But
I'm ready.
I think it's a Hulu. I think it's a Hulu only deal.
I don't care. I got them all. Justin, 4 out of time. Tell everybody again about the Observer.
AuburnObserver.com. Check it out. $6 a month or $60 a year. We email you a newsletter or a podcast pretty much every weekday. Got a lot of good stuff on there in Auburn football and men's basketball.
All right, Justin, have a great weekend.
Yep.
I think John Hamm is the lead on the new Fargo
season. Yeah, I think so. I hadn't seen any, it's about to happen.
Dick Whitman himself is going to be part of that one.
All right, we will.
That's for two people.
We'll talk to you tomorrow, but we're out of time here on the Thursday Drive. Yeah. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.